atmavatam anupatadyad vimukta samasta sangasya vivikta punyaranya sharanasyatmavata atmani saravesham atmanam bhagavati vasudeve tad anushravana manana sankirtanu radhana smarana bhiyoge ena shunya sakalayamena kalena samaveshitam samahitam katsnena manastu punarmama buddhyasyaran mrigasutam anuparisushrava. Translation. In the body of a deer, Bharat Maharaj began to lament. What misfortune, aho kashtam. I have fallen from the path of the self-realized. I gave up my real sons, wife and home to advance in spiritual life, and I took shelter in a solitary holy place in the forest. I became self-controlled and self-realized, and I engaged constantly in devotional service, hearing, thinking, chanting, worshipping, and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. I was successful in my attempt, so much so that my mind was always absorbed in devotional service. However, due to my personal foolishness, my mind again became attached, this time to a deer. Now I have attained the body of a deer, and have fallen far from my devotional practices. Purport. Due to his stringent execution of devotional service, Maharaj Bharat could remember the activities of his past life and how he was raised to the spiritual platform. Due to his foolishness, he became attached to an insignificant deer and thus fell down and had to accept the body of a deer. This is significant for every devotee. If we misuse our position and think that we are fully engaged in devotional service and can do whatever we like, we have to suffer like Bharat Maharaj and be condemned to accept the type of body that impairs our devotional service. Only the human form is able to execute devotional service, but if we voluntarily give this up for sense gratification, we certainly have to be punished. This punishment is not exactly like that endured by an ordinary materialistic person. By the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee is punished in such a way that his eagerness to attain the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva is increased. By his intense desire, he returns home in the next lifetime. Devotional service is very completely described here. Tad anushravana manana sankirtana radhananu smarana bhiyogena. The constant hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord is recommended in Bhagavad Gita. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dhrudha prataha. Those who have taken to Krishna consciousness should be very careful that not a single moment is wasted and that not a single moment is spent without chanting and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his activities. By his own actions and by the actions of his devotees, Krishna teaches us how to become cautious in devotional service. Through the medium of Bharat Maharaj, Krishna teaches us that we must be careful in the discharge of devotional service. If we want to keep our minds completely fixed without deviation, we must engage them in devotional service full time. As far as the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are concerned, they have sacrificed everything to push on this Krishna consciousness movement. Yet they must take a lesson from the life of Bharat Maharaj to be very cautious and to see that not a single moment is wasted in frivolous talk, sleep, or voracious eating. Eating is not prohibited, but if we eat voraciously, we shall certainly sleep more than required. Sense gratification ensues, and we may be degraded to a lower life form. In that way, our spiritual progress may be checked, at least for the time being. The best course is to take the advice of Srila Rupa Goswami, avyartha kalatvam. We should see that every moment of our lives is utilized for the rendering of devotional service and nothing else. This is the secure position for one wanting to return home back to Godhead. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Agyanandana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Shrestham Manamapi Satiputram Atra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shriyatah Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Purajana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Ascha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare In this purport of Srila Prabhupada, he is urging the devotees who have taken to devotional service to be pure devotees and not to slip from that position. This purport is particularly addressed to devotees who have already taken to Krishna consciousness. And particularly addresses the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada uses that very phrase in this purport, of the movement at that time. Because Srila Prabhupada writes, as far as the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are concerned, they have sacrificed everything to push on this Krishna consciousness movement. So when Srila Prabhupada dictated this, this would have been in 1975, I would, yeah, it would be 1975. So the members of the Krishna consciousness that met, the devotees, members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, they were almost all, with very few exceptions, living in temples. It's different to the situation now, where most initiated devotees don't live in temples. So most of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they're all Prabhupada's disciples at that time also, they were young Westerners who had left the normal Western way of life to live in ISKCON centers and completely dedicate themselves to practicing and preaching Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada is warning them not to waste time and to be careful not to slip from the position that they are in. Now, if we apply this to the present members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, it may not seem applicable to most of them, because, or it may not seem practical for most of them, because Srila Prabhupada writes here that not a moment should be wasted without this tad anusravana manana sankirtana aradhana anusmarana bhiyogena, without hearing and chanting about and remembering Krishna, worshipping Krishna. But for most of the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness nowadays, most of them spend most of their time engaged in other anusravana manana. They're in secular life. which means that they work in a bank or an office or a factory, or mostly our movement has been active in the cities. So we're mostly city people who are working, and those they are employed by are not employing them to think about and talk about and chant about Krishna. They're employed to dedicate themselves, mind, body and words, for furtherance of the aims of the company. And the aims of the company is very easy to define. It's called profit. That's all. That's the only aim. Although they talk about corporate consciousness and all that, but it's just some kind of bluff when they plant a few trees and pretend they care about people, but actually their real aim is just to cream every last paisa out of the system that they can. So most people are obliged to work hard, and which requires a lot of concentration in a competitive world. And for them, Krishna consciousness is something they try to squeeze in the rest of the time which they have, which isn't very much, because the companies, they just want to give you as much leisure time as you need to recover sufficiently so that you can come back and work more for them. That's all. So, what to do if Krishna consciousness is to be more than a temple-based religion? If people are actually going to be pure devotees and go back to Godhead, which, as Srila Prabhupada emphasizes in this purport, is actually the aim of this movement, it's going to require intense. Tad, here tat means Krishna. Anushravana manana sankirtana aradhana anusmarana abhiyogena. It's going to require intense Krishna consciousness. Intense hearing and chanting about and remembering and serving Krishna, which requires plenty of time. I mean, even the minimum sadhana which Srila Prabhupada gave to his disciples, which if we actually followed it, it would take up at least 6 hours of our day every day, if we talk about the morning program and the evening program. But for most people, they can't imagine having 6 hours free on a daily basis. It's a luxury which they cannot have. So what to do? And they're not free for sadhana, and on the other hand, they have to dedicate their time and energy for absolutely materialistic purposes, which have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, and which are actuated by karma and lobha. The devotee themselves, they might not be deliberately cultivating material desire and material greed, but that's the basis on which the company works, and everyone around them is in that mood. And unless the worker in the workplace at least superficially gets in that mood, he can't work as an efficient member of the company. He'll lose his job, which puts him in a lot of difficulty because he has to support his family and so on. So what is the solution to all of this? Well, Srila Prabhupada, foreseeing all of this, and as we can see from the way Srila Prabhupada is beseeching the devotees in this purport to not waste a moment and not fall down and be always in pure devotional service, Srila Prabhupada wanted to create an atmosphere in which all the people of the world could come and be in Krishna consciousness. Now that doesn't mean that everyone's going to live in a temple, but Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram communities in which people can produce their necessities very simply and live together, devotees living together, so that they can talk about Krishna. Most people in their workplace, they're not allowed to talk about Krishna. It's not encouraged. But among devotees, it is encouraged. Among non-devotees, it's considered wrong to talk about Krishna. Among devotees, it's considered wrong not to talk about Krishna. So it's a much better culture to live simply among devotees and have time for structured hearing and chanting. And even while working, that working will be very simple work, not complex. Then you can relate with devotees, as devotees. Just like traditionally in India, farmers plowing the fields with their bulls would sing songs to Krishna while plowing the field, or the boatman ferrying the boat across the river would sing to Krishna. But that culture is gone, and Srila Prabhupada had the revolutionary plan to revive that. So our movement here in India has been successful as a temple movement, building temples in cities, inviting people to come, preaching to them, giving them books, encouraging people to take up Krishna consciousness in their home life. In many ways, well, we can say our movement is successful. I mean, it could be a lot more successful, but it is successful in these activities and in book distribution, at least in India. India is, if there's anywhere in the universe which is a natural environment for Krishna consciousness, it's India. Still today, despite the ever-advancing materialism, still those devotees from India who have been to the West, they can understand to some extent what an amazing task that Srila Prabhupada did to establish Krishna consciousness in the West, where people are so far away from Krishna consciousness. Just to give an example, some devotees in India who had been very successful in preaching in colleges tried to use the same formula in Russia. They'd go into the college and give some talks on showing how modern science, there are so many faults in that, and how in modern society there are so many faults in that. And having pointed this out and convinced the students, they would say, okay, so here's the solution, Bhagavad Gita. And in India, many students would take that. Okay, you know, science, there's problems in that, and modern society, there's problems in that. The people who have showed us this, they're very lucid in their presentation. We can understand they're very pure in their character. They follow these principles. They're offering us Bhagavad Gita, which we don't know much about, but we've heard of it and we respect it. And then they show, you see, here's Bhagavad Gita, you follow this, 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 and then people take it up. Not everyone takes it up, but at least some of the students do. So when they tried to do that in Russia, they showed problems in modern science, and then students agreed. Problems in modern society, students agreed. And then when they said Bhagavad Gita, they said, why Bhagavad Gita? They said, okay, that science, problems in science, you showed that, very good. And then you showed problems in modern society, okay, but and actually it's a fact, it's not necessarily a logical step to go from understanding problems in modern society and modern science to accepting Bhagavad Gita. For someone in India, especially from a Hindu background, they can make that jump very easily. But for someone in Russia, why? Okay, you show what the problem is, but that's no reason that why we should accept this as an answer. So that's just one example how India is still today of the natural. If there's any place in the world where Krishna consciousness can spread widely, that is India. Of course, there may be small countries like Mauritius, where most of the population is Hindus, originally their forefathers from India. But India is the natural land, and our movement has been quite successful in building temples, and that's the standard formula that our movement follows, which is to go into a city, put your flag in, okay, this is my spot, and build a temple, and then you preach in the area, and people come and they become devotees. However, we should also consider that that is not all that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do. He wanted to create a situation in which all the people of the world could take to Krishna consciousness, and that those who have taken to Krishna consciousness can actually be in Krishna consciousness and not on a part-time basis. So, Srila, and I mean, there are many reasons for Srila Prabhupada wanting to establish the Varnashram, rural communities. Another reason is, if we're talking about material compassion and helping suffering people, Srila Prabhupada's solution to helping the people in the slums wasn't to give their children food so that they could go to the school. Whoops, sorry, I shouldn't be political here. But actually it's a fact. I mean, that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's idea, that they could get food and then remain part of the horrible society. You know, that in modern life where you have to work. We say work like an ass, but an ass would refuse to work as much as the humans do. Srila Prabhupada, 2,000 people a day coming to Bombay, Srila Prabhupada had the program, he sent Lokanath Swami into the villages and said, you should go in the village and tell the people, don't leave the village. Stay in the village and chant Hare Krishna. So one reason is to save people from the hellish modern way of life, in which it is bifale shevinu kripana dura jana chapala shukalaba lagire, simply working for someone who has nothing in his mind about the self-interest of the people that he employs, or of anyone else except themselves and their immediate family members. Working to produce some useless things for useless people, for some useless sense gratification. But rather, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted, I mean, this is, on the material level, compassion, the all-around solution is there. Instead of, you know, people are living in the slums and you collect some plastic bags so that they don't live in so much filth or whatever. But the full solution is to teach people that they don't need sense gratification, that they're attracted to the city so that they can come and they can afford to have a nail polish and go to the beauty parlor and buy all kinds of garbage. Even the food is garbage. So, yeah, the food is poison. What do you eat? Poison. Everyone is eating poisonous food. So this was Srila Prabhupada's program. This is the next phase of his movement, as he said. And in one sense, this formula for success in the cities has led us to forget that we have a lot more to do also. That Srila Prabhupada's desire is certainly to have temples and people in the cities coming to the temples, but beyond that, there's so much more. And now another area Srila Prabhupada wanted, he's very much eager for us to, as a movement, to pursue, but which has been largely neglected in our movement, is preaching to the intelligentsia. Now, of course, in the cities in India, we do go to IIT and all this kind of thing. But what I'm talking about is convincing the hard-headed, atheistic intellectuals by presenting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in a manner that even people who are not very much inclined to Krishna consciousness will have to accept that at least this is a philosophy that we can accept. It's something very intelligent, because even though we do preach in the colleges, and this is my, it's my subjective outlook, but we're mostly picking up the more pious people. But the real challenge is to defeat atheism, to make an impact on those who are not so pious. So there's Bhaktivedanta Institute for taking up philosophical and scientific issues with hard-headed materialists, the people who in many ways they influence the way the world is running on, the people who advise the government on various policies and schemes, the people who write the curriculum for schools and colleges, the top professors who are leaders in their field, and the leaders in the field all over the world, they're all completely materialistic and atheistic. So combating that is a great challenge. Last night, the question I was talking about, how in Bombay there are so many people taking up Krishna consciousness. Well, we learned of a group of, you're in a company with 500 employees, lawyers or legal clerks. Their employees in some company, and you find there's no interest in Krishna consciousness, or very, very little, and they think it's just something sentimental and anachronistic. How to convince such people who have no interest in anything religious, who are still of the Nehruistic outlook that religion is the worst thing that ever happened to India? It's not only Nehru, I mean, there are plenty of people in the world who think like that. And actually, it's quite a plausible case. Well, then again, I mean, apart from the philosophical challenge, which is the Varnashram communities in themselves are tremendous preaching. We are preaching that this material world, the sense gratification, is completely useless. It's a diversion from the actual goal of life. That Krishna provides everything. We can demonstrate that in Varnashram communities. How to live very simply, produce your own food, live a healthy life, and that will appeal, or that is more likely to appeal, to people who think that religion is a curse. You can tell people that, okay, forget the religion, look at the way that we're living. We don't suffer from traffic jams. We don't have to go in the crowded trains at the risk of your life. We don't suffer from tension and fatigue. If the whole world monetary system goes into a spin, it's been spinning for the last few years, then you won't be affected. If you're growing your own food, producing your own clothing, you build your own house from local materials, then there may be a financial crisis, you won't know anything about it. Then if there may be food shortages, these big cities like Bombay, they're very vulnerable, as I was saying last night. If for 2 or 3 days the import of the food from outside is stopped for some reason or other, whatever it may be, then it's a major crisis. And I don't know if the governments have any contingency plan for that. What will they do? They're just hoping that everything goes on okay, but there's no guarantee of that. If a war is declared, for instance, and then all the oil, nowadays no one declares war, they just go and attack someone else. Anyway, but the oil supply, which is coming from outside, that's also threatened or cut down, and then the oil is required for the army, and then you can't supply food to the cities, and what do you do? People don't think of these things, but when it hits them, then they'll know. And anyway, even without that, with the price of oil going up and the value of the rupee plunging day by day, then people, they can't afford food. Food is becoming a luxury. So this is the natural, this is the solution which Srila Prabhupada, in his tremendous wisdom, inspired by Krishna, he had the vision for that. Somehow, either we don't have the vision, we lost the vision, or we put it on the back burner, as they say. We relegated it to something that maybe we'll do sometime in the future. But in the meantime, people are becoming devotees, and they face this problem that they have to, even if they want to be Krishna conscious, they have to live among materialistic people, putting most of their energy into pursuing materialistic goals, which are not favorable for becoming Krishna conscious. So on one hand, people have the philosophy and the understanding that human life is meant for God realization, and on the other hand, they don't have the means to actualize that in their lives. They're forced into a way of, they're forced to continue a way of life which probably a major factor in their taking to Krishna consciousness was the frustration of living such a way of life, but they have no other recourse than to continue that. And they can't imagine anything else, and they put their children, on the one hand they want their children to be Krishna conscious, on the other hand they send them to a school where they're likely to break all the regulated principles, because that's what all the kids do. I was recently in Vellore, near to Chennai, where there's one of India's most prestigious educational institutes, Vellore Institute of Technology, where I was told that the boys and girls from all over India go there. So the girls' parents, on admitting their daughters, they have to, part of the contract is they have to sign that if my daughter gets an abortion, the college will not be held responsible. And they still admit them in the college, knowing that there's a high risk of their getting an abortion, and still they admit them. So this is the horrible condition of modern society, in which even the people who are devotees, they're pushing their children into that nasty educational system because they can't imagine anything else and there is no alternative. That's another thing. Srila Prabhupada wanted the Gurukuls, which in Srila Prabhupada's understanding, or what in understanding he imparted to us, Gurukul is a place where brahmacharis go to imbibe from the beginning of life Krishna consciousness, and specifically to become preachers of Krishna consciousness, whereas nowadays we have schools with the government syllabus, with a different, with materialistic aim. So of course it is in many ways easier to be part of the society or operate the Krishna conscious movement in tandem with the modern society. But the problem with that is that the modern society is going to hell. And everyone who just lives a normal life in the modern world, by being a normal citizen, even without breaking any laws of the state, the average person just goes to hell, because everyone's cultivating lust, greed and anger and performing sinful activities. And being sinful is considered normal and proper and respectable. What would be what according to Shastras is sinful is considered normal. So we can see in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is pleading with his devotees to be fully in Krishna conscious, not to fall down from that standard, but and he gave a formula for which, not just a program, a social revolutionary program by which devotees can live like that, but it takes a lot of conviction and a lot of commitment to do so, because it's difficult in many ways to do so, and everyone will say you're crazy, and no one likes to be called crazy. People will be against us in so many ways, and so we find it easier to go along with the current flow of society. And even though even though Srila Prabhupada here, he's asking devotees not to fall down from the standard of being fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, but we've taken it as the general standard that devotees won't be in full Krishna consciousness, and apart from the few who are fortunate enough to be able to live in a temple. But as most people in the world are married, and will continue to be so. It's just taken for granted that whatever they can do at the weekend or whatever, that's okay, that's good. Which is good, I mean, it's a lot better than not being a devotee at all, but to go back to Godhead requires deep absorption in Krishna consciousness, which the formula given by the acharyas is to have a good association, strong sadhana, and then there's a question, then the question of being fully in Krishna consciousness arises. But if we don't even have that, then we're very much disadvantaged. So there's some food for thought if anyone wants to think about this. I'm thinking about this a lot because as Srila Prabhupada's disciples, we're all given the mandate by him to spread Krishna consciousness very widely to every town and village and every person. And as disciples of Srila Prabhupada, we shouldn't just be accepting the honor of being disciples of Srila Prabhupada and everyone bowing down, but we really have to take up the challenge that Srila Prabhupada gave us to give an alternative to people, an alternative not just in terms of spiritual culture, but a whole way of life in which people can actually culture Krishna consciousness at every moment of their lives. Hare Krishna. So, any question, comment, or any such thing, please. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Rama.
Maharaj, you said during the past that you should try to go to the countryside. For a lot of people who are...
Well, I didn't exactly say that. Go on.
Okay. For a lot of people who are used to living in the city, the way of life that I think you proposed would seem a bit too austere.
Yes.
For example, working on the land, maybe yes. Without electricity and so forth.
Yes.
To solve that problem, the temple of Ajahnavati is doing a project in Vara, where they're trying to have the best of both worlds, as it were. So on the one hand, it's in the countryside, and on the other hand, they're building some nice houses, and they have electricity, and so forth. What do you think of that as a kind of...
Halfway house.
Halfway house, yes.
Well, I'm taking it in another way. I'm expecting that not everyone will do that, will move out to the country and live in the country like that. But some will. Those who do so, they are the pioneers who leave their well-paying city jobs and their prestige and all this and become the pioneers. And then others can follow their example. And going out at the weekend to the country, I mean, all right, but the rest of the week you still have to work in that atmosphere. So we don't expect everyone to do that. But some will, and those who do, they can preach to others by practice and by precept. And I saw some devotees, I told you about that yesterday, some devotees who they were, husband and wife with their children. The husband had a well-paying job, but he didn't want his children to go to the Kami schools and become another Rakshasa, which is, you know, the normal thing nowadays. that they become Sutantai Ravanas. So he started this project with a few other Grihastha devotees from a similar background. They don't have any background of all this, but they're learning it as they go along. And although they were serious devotees before, from their face it's so visible how blissful they are, because now they have the opportunity to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. And it is difficult, no electricity. In the summer in Gujarat it's damn hot. But they've decided that this is what we want to do for our family and for Krishna and Prabhupada's mission, and they're doing it. And there are many struggles, and it's still very much in the beginning stage, but we can say so far so good. They're very happy, and by that they can preach to others. And we always heard that no one would join, but actually there are many people who are willing to give it a try, which means giving up their so-called good job in the city, moving to the land and learning to do things which they have no experience of, because they want to be Krishna conscious. And for those who are convinced that we want to be Krishna conscious over and above everything else, then they're willing to accept all those other difficulties, especially knowing that Srila Prabhupada wants them to do it. So they get the mercy of Krishna, and that carries them through all those difficulties. So we don't expect everyone to do it, but some will, and then others will follow. And even materially speaking, the best advice I could give to any young householder, not just you, but anywhere in the world, is to get some land, good farming land, a long way from any city, and grow your own food and produce what you need. Because if and when the cities collapse, you won't be you can go on. And you have to be a long way from the city, so the hordes from the city can't reach you to take away everything that you have. And there's a whole movement of young people in America doing that, not devotees. People who have got university degrees, good careers lined up, who are just leaving the cities, going on the land and growing their own food, because they can see that's the best thing we can do for our family and for our security, for our future, for everything. They don't want to be in the cities. I mean, in terms of personal security, you can be physically attacked any time. In terms of the culture, in every way, I mean, these are not devotees, but they're just non-devotees, so they're just seeing that this society is at a dead end, and they're leaving it. That's very big preaching. We should be. I've said this many times. There's this rainbow gathering in America, where every summer, how many people go to that? 100,000, 200,000, huge gathering of young people and older hippies or whatever. They go to some very remote place in America. They choose a different state each time. And they go there for 7 days or 10 days. There's no electricity, and they play their guitars and do whatever they're doing. So one devotee asked me to go there and preach, and he said every time we go there we come back with some new devotees. So I said to him that if you just do what Prabhupada said, have these farm communities, you won't have to go to any rainbow gathering. These people will come to you. Prabhupada said that people will join our farms in the millions, and now is the time if we actually had our farm communities together. So it's easy to talk about it. I'm talking about it. Things begin with talking. And some are taking it up. Bhima Prabhu, you want to say something? Did I see?
about in Srila Prabhupada's instructions on self-sufficiency, I think you place a lot more emphasis on growing your own food.
Yeah.
As opposed to not having electricity or something like that.
Growing your own food, yeah.
That was his main thing that I remember.
That's right, yeah.
His instructions was that self-sufficiency and growing your own food. Whatever you grow, you use. You don't grow something that you intend to sell or not use.
Yeah, but then he did say at one of those farms he went to grow castor plants for oil, for lighting. The thing is that if you do have electricity, then follows all the appliances, and you have to pay the bill, which means you have to produce more than you need for your own self-sufficiency. That's true, but then you have to buy the parts to... You know, you have to buy the generating system when it goes wrong. Maybe it just makes things more complex, that's all.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is a detail. That is a detail.
The main thing that I remember is the chill process.
Grow your own food, produce what you need, not anything more than that, and chant Hare Krishna. So to have these communities, we also have to have good kirtans and classes that people want to come to. So they have to have regular spiritual input. They have to have spiritual satisfaction. Otherwise, when problems come, which they will do, they'll think, okay, I'm going to take a hitchhike back to the city. So
the problem inside here. In Hare Krishna land, that we should grow here the flowers for the deity.
Right here on Hare Krishna land?
Yeah, you wanted the flowers?
That's it. I was just thinking this morning when I was offering flowers to Prabhupada, like they must have been plucked 24 hours ago somewhere out in Maharashtra.
Yeah, so it might be a little difficult now to grow enough flowers because the land has been used.
Well, what about on the roof?
Well, we have a farm now.
Yeah.
In Talasa. They
have to drive them in. It's too far for bullock carts to come. They don't allow bullock carts in Mumbai Mahanagar, probably, is it?
Well, you can take the train. They have lots of bullock carts. There's more goods shifted by bullock cart in Maharashtra than truck.
In Maharashtra?
Well, probably all over India, but I know it from Maharashtra for sure.
They still have the bulls.
Oh, yeah. They have these bulls called Kilari bulls. And they're very workers, and they carry their sugar cane.
Hare Krishna. Another question, 2, 3. Hands shooting up. It's not the stock exchange. Hands are going up.
Hare Krishna. I wanted to ask a question about what Swami, your role that Bollywood should play.
What role should Bollywood play?
In your eyes.
In my eyes. Well, I said that, didn't I? They could produce Krishna conscious films. Like when the Indian cinema industry began, it was all stories from Mahabharata and Meera and all this kind of thing. So you could go back to that. You can go and tell the directors. Commercially, it can be successful also. Why not?
Maharaj, when I was staying a few years at Meena Road, between my two services camp, we had every Monday Bhagavad classes in the Bhagavad Namaskar auditorium, and once Radhana Swami answering a question of the director's wife, she was asking that now her two children, Rankadevi and Sudevi, are growing up. And she's not able to serve in the temple like before, making garlands and other services and attending the morning program. She's chanting 16 rounds. And so, this is her difficulty. So, Maharaj said, when they get back from that hellish, or at least hostile environment out there every day from school and other activity, it will make a Krishna conscious environment. In the home, to encourage them is the entire and direct service to Guru and Krishna by you. Though you son and you are 16 now. And think this just to him. Because you spoke about difficulties that the people have to, the men have to spend so much time in another consciousness and have a little time for basic stuff. Huh?
Mm.
So in that context I thought this would be good to hear.
Yeah, that mothers should help their children to be Krishna conscious.
Mm-hmm.
The first guru, the mother. Are we on a... we're going to have to cut out now? Okay, continue. Put the mic a little closer to your mouth.
Maharaj was saying about the Krishna's. That they could go to, those who will go to the farms rather than being in cities, they will be the pioneers who will inspire others. So what about those who will not be like that? You know, like
those who don't, well, they just have to do the best they can under the conditions they're in. I mean, they can also do, it's not that they're condemned.
Like say,
there's so much service they can do in the city also. Depending on the time that they have to do it.
Okay, like nowadays there are some projects like where the grihasthas come together and, you know.
Yeah, okay, yeah, they can do that. We're not pronouncing a curse on them. We're just saying that according to this purport, Srila Prabhupada is so much emphasizing how we have to be in Krishna consciousness at every moment. And the whole environment that most of our devotees are in is not at all conducive to that. And on the basis of that, I spoke everything else that I spoke in the class, on the basis of the purport. So, it's a revolutionary proposal, but then Krishna consciousness is revolutionary. The idea that we should, that human life is not meant for enjoyment of the senses, but is meant for surrendering to Krishna and getting out of the cycle of birth and death, it's a revolutionary proposal. So if you accept Krishna consciousness, then why not take it to its full conclusion?
Can I ask one more question?
You just ask one, you can have another one. I mean, just asking if you can ask a question is asking a question. So just ask it.
Rupa's vision, as I understand, for the farm, for the farms, was that we produce our own food. But Rupa also said that grihasthas, they should be having outside income, and they should stay outside temple. But nowadays,
really? Well, he gave different formulas for grihasthas also. Another thing he said for grihasthas living in this, he also said grihasthas who are earning outside, they should donate to the temple. But what I see most grihasthas, you know, that whatever they earn, they spend huge amounts for their children's education, huge amounts for their home loan, and very little for Krishna consciousness, actually. For their car, they'll, you know, spend so much money, and then, you know, a few hundred rupees here and there for the temples in most cases. So another thing Srila Prabhupada said, well, this is for the West, was for grihasthas to own prasadam restaurants. So it wasn't that Srila Prabhupada only had only one formula, but the big plan was the Krishna conscious farms.
Not that we see that nowadays, farms are coming up, which is temple based for it, but then grihasthas are inspired to go there. That means temples are supporting
that. Well, this is getting into details a bit. I'm just talking about general principles now. Talk about the details, we'll talk all day and night. That should be done, but not here. Okay, well, one more question there. Well, there's a hand up there, so let the mic go back there.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. On a positive note, I recently visited New Vrindavan in West Virginia, USA for the Festival of Inspiration. And we had a long talk with Tapakunja Das Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada's servant who was initially given the farming service. And we were actually kind of sad to see that there's a beautiful farm over there with very innovative devotee workforce that is actually maintained. And Tapakunja Das Prabhu does all the workforce over there by himself in maintaining the farm. So since we live in Detroit, USA, and after we had a long talk with them, this year on July 21st, the first time in the history of the Detroit Rath Yatra, we are going to have a farming booth where we are going to talk about how farming is so central to the entire nation as a whole and also the international, basically all humanity, where he himself will be coming from New Vrindavan and displaying his knowledge in terms of posters. And also, all the devotees are vegetarian, so they vegetarian. So the farming booth is going to be right next to the vegetarianism booth, and immediately next to it with the prasadam lounge. So we will make sure that every single person who goes to the Rath Yatra for the prasadam feast essentially has to go to the farming booth, the vegetarian feast information site, and then to the prasadam. So we need everybody's blessings to make this a grand success, so that being Detroit a very urban city, that we can sort of become like a preaching hub, not in a very overt way, but in a covert way, because everybody has to eat.
You can't eat rubber tires. You can't eat motor cars, right?
So
Detroit is a famous city of motor cars. It's a city which has been dying for the last few generations. It's practically dead, but I mean, somehow it's kept alive. So that's and it's surrounded by millions of acres of fertile land. I mean, America's most of the land is very good land. And America was founded by farmers, right? That was the American life. Yeah, if people lived on land, produced their own food. Jai, Hare Krishna. Yeah. Okay. Why don't you tell me, and then I'll. This is the last question, comment, or whatever.
A holy place will promote and support devotional service, but it did not happen in the case of Bharat Mara, though he was in a very sacred place. So does it? Plays an important role in devotional service.
The holy place. It's certainly very important. Jekane Vaishnav Gan Sheshtan Vrindavan. Where there are devotees, that place is Vrindavan, says Narottam Das. So Srila Prabhupada, following the comments of the previous acharyas, in this section on Bharat Maharaj, he says that because Bharat Maharaj wasn't performing devotional service under the direction of a guru to guide him, therefore he got into such a mess. So being in a holy place is good, but still we all need guidance and help, don't we?